Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I am the dive mistress.
I don't know why you hesitated on that, but you are.
There was no hesitation.
A little hesitation. But anyway, today we've got something incredibly special for you. We have the definitive retrospective of the entire Saw film franchise.
A Saw-trospective,
if you will.
Yes.
Minor apologies, we were supposed to do this in two parts. One this week, and then one next week after the new Saw movie. But then it turned out that we did not know when the Saw movie was opening. So we had to rush out and see the Saw movie this week so we could talk about it all at the same time. So sorry we couldn't get you up to speed on the Saw franchise before you saw the new film. But since almost no one saw the new film this past weekend, maybe you were waiting for us. I don't know. Before we get started, I'd just like to say that I was reading on the Dive Mistress's Twitter feed, which you should all follow, by the way. It's that entertaining. That she was excited to find out that someone had searched for the Dive Mistress on Google.
Yes. No, I didn't Twitter that. I sent you an email.
Oh, you
don't even know. You don't even know what you're talking about.
I don't pay attention. I was just trying to plug the Twitter feed. Come on. Give me
Yeah, thanks. No, that was good.
But anyway, you sent me an email saying that. And so I actually got curious to find out what Google terms were getting people to my website. And it's almost exclusively people who want to know why a guy stuttered in the first episode of Criminal Minds.
Oh, see, for me, it's actually mostly just snuff.
Yeah, when you told me that, I'm like, I've got to do something about snuff so I can get some of that sweet snuff Google searches going.
I'm telling you, 90% of the people who stumble upon Zombots are Googling snuff.
That is so creepy. The weird part is I don't have anyone Googling Count Vargelon, but I got a lot of people Googling Vargelon, which is nice. Although I maintain a lot of those are typos.
Everyone wants to know about Vargelon.
Exactly. The thing that I found really confusing, though, and I just wanted to bring this up, was I've written a lot about a lot of horror movies on the site, because obviously that's what it's for. But one of the searches was for Count Vargelon, Castle Vargelon space, then in brackets, in quotes, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I'm like, I don't think I've ever written anything about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Well, maybe somebody wants you to.
Yeah, I know. Find out.
That's so bizarre. Or I guess, you know, it's expected from all the other content on the site that you would have at one point written about
the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I guess you're right. I should really get on top of that. So that's, you know, a project for down the line. I'm going to start writing about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I read all of their terrible comic books. I can talk about that.
There you go.
I own a few of them, so there you go.
But we're not here to talk about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
No, we're not. We're here to talk about a series of films entitled, confusingly, Saw.
I don't think it's all that confusing.
No, it's not that confusing. It's just really awkward to ask people if they've seen Saw.
It's true. You do sound like a bit of a moron.
Yeah, like you can't talk about the films without feeling silly. But
Saw. Have you seen Saw?
Exactly.
Are you going to see Saw?
You see what I'm talking about, like right? It's just horrible. But you have one last note. The Dive Mistress is recording today. Not from her home.
That's right. But from my lab. It's actually a workspace I share with some other people. But they're not here anymore. Because it's, you know, we're approaching the end of the workday. So I'm alone in this big room, which is down a hallway at the back of a building, which is slowly emptying out.
So just so you're all aware, at some point during this recording, the Dive Mistress is going to be murdered, and then you, our viewer, and I are going to have to team up to discover who the killer was by listening what's that movie called? Blowout style to like details on the tape for clues. But then in a crazy turn, third act twist, it's going to turn out that you were the killer and you're going to be like chasing me through a forest or something. So look forward to that.
Fun times ahead on the AVOD.
But seriously, we are here to talk about a movie and not just screw around. Not just one movie, though. An entire series. A veritable franchise of movies, comic books, and video games.
What?
Yeah, there's a couple of comic books and video games. We're not actually going to talk about those.
I'm not prepared to talk about comic books or video games.
I know.
I watch movies.
I know. I played the video game, but even I'm not going to talk about the video game. Don't worry. I was going to, but then it was very redundant. And maybe I'll just mention it briefly in the wrap-up segment. So I guess we can start with the first Saw movie.
Begin?
I think so, logically. I found out about the Saw movie 6 years ago, I guess. And I guess it had been under the radar for me because, you know, it had been a hit at Sundance or whatever, you know. But I wasn't really following any of that. And I don't go to movie festivals, so I hadn't heard anything about it. So I heard about it while Craig Ferguson was auditioning to take over the Craig Ferguson show. You know, the horrible guy before him had left and they were auditioning like 15 people, giving them a week each. And I only tuned in for Craig Ferguson's because I was already a fan of Craig Ferguson's interview. And he was talking to Cary Elwes about the movie Saw. And that's how I found out about it. Was Craig Ferguson interviewing him about the reverse bear trap.
Oh, see, I knew about it.
Okay.
I don't have a funny story about how I came into contact with the film.
You just knew there was a new horror movie.
I just knew there was a movie coming out called Saw.
Which you then saw.
Which I then
God!
Saw.
Oh, I know, come on!
I know, it's going to happen a lot, so you might as well get used to it.
So
I liked it. I liked it
upon its first viewing. Okay. Oh, and just so everyone knows, so you don't complain later, this is basically 1 2-hour spoiler. So we're not going to be coy at all about discussing every single element of these films.
I think at this point, though,
everybody knows.
Yeah.
Okay. So when I first saw the movie, I was not a fan of the movie.
No.
I was not a fan of the movie Saw, and I'll tell you why. I felt like, well, first off, everything in the bathroom I thought was just solid gold. Like, I really enjoyed, well, okay, half of the stuff in the bathroom, which I'll get to in a second. But, like, I love the tense stuff in the bathroom, and I felt like, why does this film keep cutting away to flashbacks and stuff going on outside that's so much weaker than the stuff they've got going on in the bathroom? Mm-hmm. You know, and that bothered me. And then this thing that in the bathroom bothered me was that Lee Whannell is an unbelievably bad actor.
But, you know, you just sort of, you have to accept that and move on.
I have to accept that he's one of the worst actors I've ever seen.
Well, he's not very good, granted. But the writing is good enough that it kind of supersedes his acting, I think. Because, like, those are, like, all the bathroom stuff, like you said,
is pretty
very good.
Yeah.
So, you know, you kind of got to, like I said, accept it and roll with it.
Well, the thing is, I really like most of the bathroom stuff. But I actually even have a qualm with the bathroom stuff, which is I don't understand why the character that terrible actor Lee Whannell plays is such an unbelievable dick the entire time. Like, he's constantly not telling Cary Elwes stuff and being suspicious of Cary Elwes. And I'm like, dude, it's clearly not Cary Elwes who's behind this. Like,
however much
it might piss off Cary Elwes to discover that you've been taking candid photos of him for Danny Glover, which, hey, Danny Glover's in this movie. How great is that? however much it might piss that guy off, like, you're both in the same predicament.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't get why he's such an ass for so much of the time.
Well, I think that's just sort of one of your classic tropes, is that somebody is withholding information in an attempt to draw out the story and create drama and conflict. which is something I really hate. It pisses me off to no end, that kind of crap.
No, and this film was exactly that way.
Yeah.
Because you really feel like if he had just sat down and if they had sat down and talked, I'm not saying they could have figured out a way easily out of the situation, because, yeah, they were in a pretty bad situation.
There was no way out, because the key to the shackle got flushed down the drain.
I know! Which, I just, yeah, and this is what, a term that that shows up quite a bit in my notes, is that Jigsaw is a dick. And and what's interesting is that there was no way for Adam, the Lee Whannell character, he could not have lived out the ordeal. Like, there was no way for him to survive. It's debatable whether had Cary Elwes shot Lee Whannell at some point in the movie, you know, like killed him much earlier in the film, that he would have let Cary Elwes go. I don't know that he would have, because, again, Jigsaw's a dick.
But I like to think that, I mean, as much, I mean, he is a dick, but I think that if Cary Elwes did shoot Adam or Lee Whannell, then Jigsaw would have, in fact, let him go.
You know, I think so, too. I mean,
because he's not a hypocrite.
Well, actually, we're going to get to his hypocrisy a little later on. But you're right. Looking at the film, on the first film under its own terms, I guess he's not technically a hypocrite.
Right. I think that's like, because this is the first movie in the franchise, we have to examine this one within a vacuum.
Although, given how much of the later films are given to, like, how much of the running times of films 4, 5, and 6 are spent flashing back to the first film and giving us more and more backstory about the first film. Like, there's a lot of it.
Well, that's, I mean, I've got something to say about that, so we can get,
we'll get to that later. Because, see, that's the one hard part about approaching these movies. There's so much overlapping.
Yeah. Like, but this film, though, as I said, the first in the series, and the second one, too, but for different reasons.
Yeah.
Kind of got to, you got to look at them on their own.
On their own terms, you're right. It isn't until the third film that the continuity really started ramping up.
Yeah.
So there are some interesting things in the movie, and he says he's not a killer, right? He's constantly telling people he's not a killer, but I've got a question.
Okay.
If he's not a killer, then why was he gonna, like, we saw him kidnap a dude, strap a dude in a chair, and put two drills up to his neck and say, your life is going to be used to test this new contraption of mine. And we have no reason to believe that had the cops not come in and saved that guy at that moment, he would in fact have killed that guy just to test one of his machines.
That's entirely possible. I mean, he didn't have any little recorded message or anything.
And he was doing it in his workshop. So it's not like he could have let the guy go.
That's true. Although I suppose you could argue that it's, you know, Shawnee Smith is involved with that one and possibly Kostas Mandalore, but
No, we're looking at the film on its own terms at this.
I know. I just kinda I just contradicted myself.
You contradicted the hell out of yourself.
Yeah, I guess you're right. He was just gonna kill that guy.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the cops actually stopped him from murdering someone.
But it's actually not until later movies where he professes to not, in fact, be a killer. I don't think in the first movie he ever comes out and says...
Well, no, he never comes out and says anything in the first film.
I'm a killer. That stuff happens later.
Yeah, but no, in the first film, the cops go out of their way to say, technically, he's not a killer. He always puts...
Before they found him with this guy.
I know.
So, you know.
I know, but he still... the theme comes up a lot, I guess, is my point.
Yeah.
And I guess I have to wonder, it's like, there's always so many questions left. Even in the first film, I found myself with a ridiculous number of questions. Like, I get that he wanted Shawnee Smith, right, to value her life and blah, 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 blah.
He wants everybody to value their life.
No, he does, and I appreciate that. Well, some people he just wants to kill, but we're going to get into that in later films. He wants everybody to value their lives, right? But with Shawnee Smith, like, we see him do two others. One is the razor wire guy, which, and I don't want to be a jerk about that, but I really feel like the razor wire trap should have been easier to get out of than they made it.
I know. I think that one would have.
I think you could have gotten out of that.
Viable, but there's the razor, the dude in the trap.
Yeah. Freaked out. Exactly.
Exactly. And rightfully so, but.
No. What I'm saying is.
Level head, he totally could have gotten himself out of there.
Yeah. I guess my point was, that seemed like the fairest trap he's come up with, the razor wire. Because the second trap we see in the film, again, with the guy who, I don't remember what that guy had done, but who he was going to set on fire if he didn't, you know, look at the thing, to get the numbers, and walk over broken glass barefoot to do it, and he's naked and painted with, I assume, you know, some kind of flammable jelly.
Yeah.
Right? And the puzzling thing about that sequence was, I couldn't even tell what he was supposed to do in that game. Like, there was just...
Find the combination to the safe.
Yeah, but how could he have possibly found the combination to the safe when there was 6,000 numbers just written on the walls? Like,
well, there wasn't... He wasn't timed.
I know he wasn't timed, but there's 6,000 numbers, all of which
had,
look the same.
But I think the numbers... It wasn't... They were, I think the numbers were in sets, so he had to just, like, each set of three numbers... I don't
he
think it was just
try.
Yeah, just choose.
No,
three
they were just really, really long strings of numbers. I kind of figured that like three of the numbers would have been written in a different color or something, and he had to find those. But anyway, we don't spend enough time with him. Really got a good sense of these tasks. But the point I was getting to was that these are two in a row, kind of fair, maybe winnable tests that are hopefully going to teach you a lesson. But then with Shawnee Smith, the test is like, kill this guy.
I'm like, not, well, and you have to get the key out of his gut.
Oh, yeah. But I'm like, what lesson are you teaching that guy? Or is that guy, no, that guy isn't learning a lesson. He's just there to be murdered.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. He's cannon fodder. He he ups the body count. That's what he does.
And in the, well, he does. Literally. That's the purpose the guy serves in the movie. But the funny thing is, if you watch the film, his moral point that he had in the first film, which of course goes right out the window with the second film, you know, and just gets more and more, you know, tenuous with each subsequent entry in the series. But in the first film, they blow his moral point right away by like putting this random guy there for her to murder, you know, and in the same way, making the game not survivable for Adam. The first two other games we see are survivable and could teach you a lesson. But in a, like I said, in a trend that will become the theme of the film, the rest of the thing, it's like, you have to kill a person to survive. And I'm like, well, how is that a valuable lesson? Like, when it's sacrifice for yourself to do something, I get how theoretically you could be kind of taught a lesson, but you know, being asked to murder somebody, you're just taking away someone else's life for your own. See what I'm saying? Like,
well, I guess,
do you
I
value
guess
your own life enough to murder somebody?
Yeah, and that's the question. It's like, and
but
if
I'm,
you do, then it's a survival game at that point. So
yes,
it's not really a question of moralize. It's you kind of have to moralize and justify the decisions that you make, and you consider yourself the survivor. And your life is worth living, so you're going to do whatever it takes. And if that includes killing some random dude lying on the floor, then you're going to do that.
Well, although, to be fair, in Amanda's case, he did not say that guy was alive. In fact, he said it was a corpse just to be a dick.
And then he woke up.
And then the guy woke up, but he was too paralyzed to scream.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, the point I was getting at is like, that's not an interesting moral question, because everyone is willing to kill someone to save their own life. Like, that's the nature of humanity, is we're willing to kill another person to save our own life. We will kill another person for less than to save our own life.
That is very true.
Like, when it stops being about what will you sacrifice, killing someone else isn't a sacrifice.
I guess you're sacrificing your own morals and values.
But since,
I don't know.
You know, the default
state I know that I'm reaching here. I'm just trying to defend the film because you're attacking it.
and it's your nature to defend anything I attack, and that's why you're my hero. But I guess the point I'm making is, like, if it's human nature to kill someone else to survive, like, I don't think we're giving up our morals. Like, if you put me in a room and, you know, the room is going to fill up with acid killing us both unless I shoot another guy, well, I'm like, simple math would dictate that if I don't shoot that guy, both of us die. But if I do, at least one of us lives. So, of course, I'm going to shoot that guy. It's going to, I'll feel guilty and it's going to suck for that guy, but of course I'll do it. You
know? See, my issue with the first movie, because we're still talking about the first
movie. We are still talking about the first movie.
It's less to do with Jigsaw's dick moves and more to do with just like other things in the story that really bother. First of all, Dina Meyer. She appears at the beginning and sort of, and walks the cops through the different Jigsaw traps and then exits the film. She's never seen or heard from again.
I know. It's weird.
And I have no idea who she is. Is she a police officer? Is she a federal agent? Like, he kind of like, and granted, she comes back in another film, but at this point, you really have no idea what the hell's going on. So it's like, I don't know what happened there, but it sort of, it comes off as being sort of forgetful writing, I guess.
Yeah, it is weird how she shows up, announces that she's the lead detective on the Jigsaw case, because she's the one who knows about all the traps, so she's obviously done the most work on the case, but then, like, no, I'm just going to leave and let Danny Glover, an Asian guy, interview.
Yeah, and then he takes over. But then Danny Glover, he proceeds to, once he tracks down where Jigsaw is, he goes there without a warrant.
Yeah, leading to the worst writing in that movie. It's like, why bother with a warrant? Because you have proof of where Jigsaw is?
Like, you can end this right now, but no, you're just going to go in guns blazing and kill everybody.
Like, what the hell was your plan? Yeah, like, that makes no sense.
And there's another part towards the end when the phone is ringing and Carrie always can't reach it. All he has to do is just take off his fucking shirt.
It is easier than taking off his shirt. All he has to do is pick up the hacksaw.
Just whatever. He has a number of different things he could have used to reach the phone. And this is even a bigger issue because at the beginning of the movie, he tells Lee Whannell to do that exact thing.
I know.
Because Lee Whannell's reaching for something that is out of his grasp or, you know, out of his reach. And he tells him to take off his shirt.
I know. And reach for it. Which he does, and then succeeds.
Exactly.
No, that is retardedly stupid.
So, it's, you know, some problems there that just kind of don't, that I didn't really care about the first time I saw the movie, but on subsequent viewings, it bothered me a little bit.
Oh, no, it is bothersome. And do you know what bothered me most about the whole big wrap-up at the ending of the movie? Right. Well, I'm like, Carrie Elwes, you're a doctor, okay? Why are you cutting off that foot above the shackle? Like, rule one for amputations. The higher you go, the more bleeding, the more trouble there is. You know? Should have
sawn at the joint.
Yeah, of course he should have. No, he shouldn't have even sawn at the joint. He's a doctor. He knows enough about human anatomy to know that if he cuts off his heel, the rest of his foot will fit through that shackle, and there
can
will
you
be.
Cut off your heel? Is that even possible?
Yeah, you can. Like, I'm not saying the rest of his foot won't be floppy and useless. It will, but there will be much less bleeding. It's like how if you're stuck in a pair of handcuffs, you have to cut off your whole thumb because
no, you just break your thumb.
Or you could break your thumb, yeah. But I'm just saying, if you've only got a knife and you don't have a hammer, you can cut off or break your own thumb and squeeze it at the rest of your hand and you can slip out of the handcuffs. In the same way, if you cut the heel off your foot, you know, you can easily slip out of those shackles. And as a doctor, I'm pretty sure Carrie Elwes should have known this. Even if he didn't know that, he should have cut off the foot below the shackle at the very least.
Well, I mean, he was desperate at this point.
He was desperate, but he'd had six hours to think about it, you know?
Well, he was thinking about other stuff for those 6 hours. Not
actually, by the way, the time gaps in that movie, I'm like, what were they doing for those 3 hours when we just cut away?
Not important.
A smart thing about the next, the subsequent Saw movies was they only ever take place, the traps, over like an hour or two. Because the 6 hours there is just way too much time.
Yeah, there's less of a time lag. Oh. I just thought of something else.
Yeah.
So we have, in this movie, like within the context of the Carrie Always Lee Winnell trap, there is a third participant.
Yes, the pre-filer.
The orderly from the hospital.
Yeah.
And we all, and his role in this game is that he's just there to watch the two of them in the bathroom and hold Carrie Always's family at gunpoint.
And murder them if Carrie Always doesn't murder.
Fails to kill. But like, I don't understand what he's being tested for. What's his game?
That was exactly what I was about to ask you.
So I don't really understand sort of his whole involvement in this and why he's at all important to the story. I mean, you could have left.
Well, no, here's why he's important to the story.
You would have had, you know, a good drama play out. You didn't need that third guy.
Okay, hold on. I can't believe you're kind of being a little disingenuous. You know why he's important to the story. He's important to the story so the viewers won't suspect that the guy on the floor is Jigsaw. That's why he's important to the story.
Okay. But like, I don't think I would have suspected the guy on the floor to be Jigsaw to begin with.
You would have known that. I'm just saying, if he hadn't been there, you'd be like, well, where's Jigsaw? By having him acting like a complete psycho and holding the family hostage at gunpoint, it makes it seem like he's Jigsaw for the added kick of the twist. Like, he has.
My complaint, though, is that he's just not fleshed out enough. That's just not enough of a reason for him to be there.
No, you're totally right. I mean, he's there to act as misdirection, and that's kind of weak from a writing standpoint. I'm completely agreeing with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's very, I think his name is Zep. Zep's appearance in the film is very contrived. By the way, his name is Zep.
I think people call him that. No, they actually say his real name, which is something quite pedestrian, you know.
No, it's like Steve Zepp. In a later film, we'll see him listed under the list of the victims.
Oh,
and Zepp is apparently his real last name. I know. The way Jigsaw says it on his tape makes it sound like that's a cruel nickname. And I'm like, yeah, but to be a cruel nickname, it has to A, be cruel, and B, make sense. Like, how is Zepp cruel?
Anyway. I guess one more thing I'll bring up before we can move on to number two.
Well, I do have a couple more things to bring up, but you go first.
Okay. The whole notion of the Jigsaw Killer.
Yeah.
Is that he cuts a jigsaw piece out of his victims after they've died, presumably. And we see him do this, or we see the aftermath.
Well, actually, we do know that it is after they died, because Amanda did not have a jigsaw piece out of her.
I think it would have been more poignant if he'd done it before they died. But anyway, he only does this one time in this movie.
Yeah.
And it's completely forgotten about afterwards. And the poster art for this film and subsequent films will lead you to believe that Saw has more to do with the method of his kills than with any kind of, you know, psychological thing that he's got going between himself and his victims.
Yes.
And that, I think, that kind of bothered me because, you had this interesting mark that he leaves on his victims, and the movie, you know, it could have gone in and, you know, the movie could have done more with that, I guess.
Oh, no, absolutely. In fact, it's sitting in my notes. I have this, because I had completely forgotten when I sat down to watch these movies that he cut a jigsaw piece out of people.
I know, me too.
And so here in my notes, it says, wait, did the jigsaw pieces ever lead to anything? And then in brackets, future count from 2 days later. No, they did not.
But they do, actually. It comes back at the end, but we're not there yet.
Yeah, we'll talk about that then. But anyway, but you know, we went four sequels without the jigsaw pieces ever leading to anything, which is kind of weird because they're what the film is named after.
Yeah.
Although, and we'll get to that in a second. But I gotta say, I found there's so much about the film that's just so weird, and It's not an incredibly well-made film, and I don't want to be too much of a jerk about this, but like, there's a lot of shooting stuff, and I don't think James Wan was a great director when he made this, and there's like weird cutaways and a weird tonal shift where, and I know this is partially just Lee Whannell's unbelievably bad acting, but the weird scene where he's got to fake his own death and the film turns into a broad comedy for like 10 seconds as he puts on the most hilariously bad faked death performance you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah, that's a little odd.
Yeah, and then there's this weird scene where we get Adam's flashback, and I'm like, hi, thank you for a flashback that lasts 3.5 minutes and gives us no new information. Like, it's... all they had was, God, wouldn't it be creepy if a guy was in a dark room and had to use the flashes from a camera to see things? And yes, that is interesting, and yes, that is creepy, but I didn't need 3.5 minutes of it, because I already know Adam's down in the, you know, down in the hole. I don't need to see how he got kidnapped. I certainly don't need to see 3.5 minutes of how he got kidnapped. That being said, one of the two greatest shots in the movie is in that sequence when he opens, when he's like, haha, I figured it out. You're in the closet. And he opens the closet and it's pitch black. And he's like, I guess I have to, and he does the flash and the guy is standing 2 inches in front of him.
Yeah.
but the killer waited until he did the flash. And I love that shot.
Yeah. It's a good moment.
And of course, the other good moment in the movie is, you know, Tobin Bell getting up off the floor.
Yeah, it's a good ending. Like,
it's a fantastic ending.
You gotta give it that. And I have, like, the whole thing about the movie and why people really liked it, in spite of, you know, all its flaws that we've just listed here.
Yeah.
Because, again, I hadn't seen anything like it in a long time. It was original.
No, absolutely.
So,
and I have long, for a long time I have said, and I think you, as someone who I've complained these about these movies too, will know that I've had nothing but dispraise to heap upon these movies for years, but I've always given that, like, the last minute of this movie is strong enough to warrant, like, 4 sequels. That's how strong that last minute is, because I didn't see it coming.
Fantastic moment. Me neither. I was shocked.
I had no idea.
I think, you know, my friend was grabbing onto me like, oh my God, oh my God. So.
And he gets up and he's like, yeah, your key was in the tub. Game over. And he shuts the door. That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, it's an incredible moment. And for everything wrong with that movie and the whole series of movies, which we will now be getting into the things that are wrong with them, you know, I've got to say, like, it's such a good moment. It's a unique moment. It's the best twist ending moment that I've seen in maybe ever, but at least years. Like, that's such a fantastic reveal that it makes me, like, set aside all the crap problems I have with the rest of the movie.
Wow, that's powerful.
It is. It really is. And it's why I've been so, you know, I've forgiven so much from the Saw series. In fact, I'm even going to forgive this last question I have. How did Jigsaw trigger Lee Whannell's electrocution? Like, at the end, we see he's got a little clicker for that. But before that, like, he was lying there on the floor with his hands outstretched, and they could have seen him if he had tried to trigger the electrocution.
I have no idea.
You don't have to answer. That's the best part. I've forgiven that mistake.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Okay.
That's what I was saying.
We can move on.
We can absolutely move on to Saw 2.
Okay, this Saw 2 was not written as a sequel to Saw. It was an original screenplay, totally outside of the franchise.
That was rewritten.
That was rewritten as a sequel.
Like Lethal, like Die Hard 3.
Which I like.
A fun movie, absolutely.
And I enjoyed
Which, by the way, pretty similar premise to Saw, I'm just saying. Guy phones them up, gives them brain teasers to keep things from blowing up, like, there's some similarities there.
But I mean, it's quite different in that you sort of have all these people in this house who presume are supposed to work together to get out, except they are, it seems like a bit of an unwinnable trap. Because the house is slowly filling up with gas and they're all going to choke and die.
I know.
And then you, but it's well done and it's interesting because, again, you don't know this until the end, that everything that's taking place inside a house happens earlier than the events that are taking place outside of the house. And that's the Donnie Wahlberg storyline.
Yeah.
Where he's sitting and talking to Jigsaw, because all Jigsaw wants from him is to just sit down and have a conversation. And of course, Donnie Wahlberg is such a hothead that he's incapable of sitting still for, 20 minutes and listening to an old man prattle on.
Well, it is for 2 hours, but yeah.
So I thought was really cool. And Saw 2 is still a little bit flawed in some ways, but because I really liked that idea, I'm willing to forgive the film's flaws because of that. And then, of course, the final chase scene at the end of the movie, you end up back in the bathroom. I thought that was a really nice touch as well. And you see, the dead foot and Lee Winnell's corpse and all the rest of it.
No, I'm not saying that 2 doesn't still have some good points. 2 does have some good points. But it has a lot of bad points, too.
It does. Well, here we have, for real, unwinnable traps.
Yeah, and, that thing with the room full of syringes is completely unwinnable. You could not!
No, but...
You could not have won that!
Huge needle phobia.
Oh, okay.
And so it doesn't matter whether or not you could win that challenge. It just freaked me right the hell out. Because,
well, what really bothered me about that
challenge... And he just picks her up and throws her in that needle pit.
Well,
sticking out of her. Oh, God.
And what really bothered me about that challenge was it was winnable, except he doesn't give them a good enough clue for how it's winnable. Because the key has one of the glow lights on it. So had they opened up the needle pit and then turned off the lights in the room, they would have known right where the key was. But there's no way you could think to do that when you've only got, and this is where, again...
reason for them to even think about not even to think to just turn out the lights, because they don't even know that there's a glow light on.
That's my point. They have no way to know that unless if he had said it'll be like finding a needle in a haystack in the middle of the night, then actually that would have been a nice hint, but he didn't say that. And can I point out, I'm going to say what a dick you are, Jigsaw, but do you know what one of the biggest dick moves that Jigsaw pulls is?
What?
He starts the timer when he starts his message, and then his message lasts for half of the time.
Yeah, totally unfair.
Supposedly they've got 3 minutes to find the key, which I still don't think is enough without knowing to turn off the lights, but by the time the message ends, there's only a minute left!
Yeah.
Hey, chatty Kathy, just tell me where the frigging clue is and let me get started. Jesus.
But still, I was so grossed out by the needle pit. Just the whole idea of a needle pit. I didn't really care about anything else. I was too focused on the needle pit.
I gotcha. But the thing is,
the people of this movie, though, they're the people who are stuck in the house. They're not being challenged.
No.
Really at all. The only reason they seem to be in the house is because they were framed by Donnie Wahlberg.
I know. So,
again, all of Jigsaw's moralizing that he likes to do really doesn't come into effect in this movie at all.
Well, except for the one character who's a complete psychopath.
Oh, Wrench from The Italian Job.
Exactly. The one character who's a complete psychopath and ruins the game for everyone else.
Although he does cut skin off the back of his neck.
Which, hey, I'm not saying I don't appreciate that, but when they're all sitting there and it's like, you'll find a thing in the back of your mind, and if you want to know what the order of the numbers, think about it's found over the rainbow, wink. And I'm like... That was not a hard thing to figure out, yet somehow they didn't even think about that. But what really bugged me about that sequence, that whole thing is, first off, I don't know how he could have possibly thought that there would be a situation in which someone would unlock a door while looking through the keyhole.
Well, I don't think he needed to be looking through the keyhole. It's just at head level, that gun. The guy just happened to have been looking through the keyhole.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, when you unlock a door, you're not standing in front of the door, just as a rule, as a general rule.
Yeah, you are.
No, you're always standing a little off to the side.
But the keyhole was in the middle, wasn't off, isn't where keyholes normally are in doors.
I thought it was off
so
to the
side. We had to.
Okay, so somebody had to, but it was someone else who got killed, not the guy with the door. But anyway, I guess that's not the big point I'm getting to. Although, did they, they said don't use the key, but they did have to get into the rest of the house. So that was kind of a dick thing to do, A. But more importantly, there's, one of the things that bugged me was how stupidly everyone deals with all the traps. Like, the crematorium trap, I'm like, really? So it doesn't occur to anyone that that door might swing shut? You don't want to get, like, a bar in there, keep that door from swinging shut on you? Because
yeah,
that's obviously what's going to happen.
Yeah, we are plumbing, you know, unknown depths of stupidity and narrow-mindedness.
No, characters.
With these people's actions. But,
and then
you know,
there's ridiculous
things. I mean, they're not rocket scientists to begin
to start,
with.
No, you're absolutely right.
I mean, they're drug dealers and addicts and whores and all the rest of it. So,
well, and then there's the thing that really got me about that scene where it's like, and then we see the next challenge room where, like, I gotta say, the Chinese trap box was, like, the easiest challenge in history to beat. And they have someone get killed by it because, you know, they're stumbling around confused when they come across it. I'm like,
right.
But that's the easiest challenge in the world to beat. You just, you know, get a stick and push it up there to hold it open.
But it wouldn't matter, though, because the syringe inside the box was glued to
the but there was also a little note there and a tape that could have given them that clue. You know? She didn't even, like, it was the easiest trap, and she didn't even, like, stop and listen. So the only, and then we don't even find out what, and this is one of the things that really bugged me about the movie, we don't even find out what three of the people's traps were.
Well, because they die in the hallway.
Yeah, and that's what bugs me, but I'm just saying from a writing standpoint, I wanted to know what, we know what Xavier's trap was, we know what Obi's trap was, and we know what, I think the cut wrists was for Gus. Right? So we find out those three, but we never find out what Preppy Girl, his son, Amanda, or Whore's traps were supposed to be. Or Businessman's traps. So
the son and Amanda wouldn't have traps.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't have actual traps. You're right. But still,
so Businessman,
Businessman, Whore, and Preppy Girl, we never even find out what their three extra traps were. And that really bugged me.
Oh, I didn't really care. I didn't think about it. To be perfectly honest, it didn't cross my mind.
Oh, okay.
Because they died in other horrible ways, so it didn't matter to me.
I know.
What nasty feat was in store for them behind door number three. Like, it's...
I'm just... Like, we come to these movies partially for the traps, okay? And I would have liked to see them put a little more work into the traps. I guess that's all I'm asking from that movie. But what really got me there was... I know this is going to sound a weird thing to complain about, but even on my first viewing of this film, like, by the time they get, even before he starts, you know, attacking people with a bat with nails in it, I'm sitting here thinking, how is no one noticing that, you know, Amanda is neither sweating nor going pale or sick like the rest of you are?
Because they're all too sick.
I'm just
saying,
like, if everyone is getting super pale and sweating and hunched over, like, she doesn't even cough once, you know? I feel like they should have noticed that.
Again, like, that's sort of a lesser
yeah.
issue.
Okay. So you're right. Now let's talk about the bigger issues. That this is the film that completely exposes what crap Jigsaw's philosophy is.
Well, okay, so... We find, like, Shawnee Smith is his helper.
Yes.
That's one of the things that's revealed in this film.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of the movie, the first trap is this dude who's wearing this sort of...
Fly trap.
Yeah, like, yeah, I guess a fly trap that's going to, you know, kill him when it closes on its face.
Yeah.
And the key is in his eye socket.
Ugh.
And, of course, he fails his test and ends up dying horribly.
Yep.
And you find out that this guy was a rat for the rat squad.
Yeah.
So, like, with, you know, all the moralizing that the films do, this guy, technically, maybe he led a bad life to begin with because he was a criminal, but he turned into an informant. So he's doing good, you know, yeah, by everyone's standards. I don't understand why he is in the trap to begin with. Like, well,
first off, it's part of the media's really, really offensive anti-snitch agenda that really pisses me off. That if you watch Fiction, even a little, you'll see that just constant statements against snitches. And I'm like, that thing pisses me off more than anything else because there is no more noble thing you can do with your life than snitching. Like, it is the most noble human pursuit there is. Whether
I disagree entirely. No, but it's like,
I'm sorry, knowing about a crime and then telling the police about the crime is the most noble thing you can do. You know? Like, anyone who tells the police about a crime that happens is technically a snitch. And whether you're getting paid or not, I think it's valuable. And then I remember I criticized an episode of CSI Miami for this, where, like, we got a call from Crime Stoppers about this crime, and then all the cops are like, I feel kind of dirty about using information from Crime Stoppers. Yeah. Aren't those all just dirtbags who want to get paid for solving crimes? And I'm like, that's your job! Your job is getting paid for solving crimes! So yeah, I have a problem with the anti-snitch agenda. Although in this one case, you could make the argument, although it's not said explicitly in the film, you could make the argument that the snitch was, that he was killed not because he was a snitch, although even though that's what Jigsaw says, but because he's the one who set up all those people to be framed by, you know, Donnie Wahlberg.
No, Donnie Wahlberg did the framing.
No, but it's like, this is the guy who found, like, who, like, would point out a dude for Donnie Wahlberg to frame. It's possible.
Like, it doesn't matter. In this, because the film, the film has, you know, its ethics are very black and white. There are no shades of gray.
Yeah.
And if you want to look black and white, what they say about this guy after he's dead is that he was a snitch.
Yeah.
And so, in the black and white moralizing,
snitching is evil.
Snitching should be a good thing.
Absolutely.
Because he has made an effort to turn his life around.
But by helping the cops catch up.
By helping the cops. But he still, you know, suffers the consequences of having led a terrible life earlier.
He does not suffer the consequences of having life earlier. If you listen to the message, he's punished not for the life he lived before, but for the snitching. If you listen to what Jigsaw says, he's punishing him not for what he did before he became a snitch, but for being a snitch. He's like, the society would call you a snitch. You make your living watching other people. So now I'm going to take away your ability to watch anyone at all. Cut out your own eye. That's what he says. Okay, those are not literally the words he uses, obviously.
It doesn't make any sense.
What I said or what he does?
No, what he does.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
No, but what I'm saying is that he's punishing him. Okay, maybe this is what I meant to say, but it's not what I actually said.
Okay.
Please. What I meant to say is that he's punishing him for being a snitch.
Yeah.
But if you want to look at things in the same term that Jigsaw does in the other movies, he's punishing him for the wrong. He shouldn't be doing what he's doing.
Exactly.
He shouldn't be punishing him for being a snitch.
That's my point. That's where I was going to get started before you did. Started for me, thank you, about the terrible morality of Jigsaw in this film.
And if he wants to punish him for things he did earlier in life, well, he can't because this man's already tried to turn his life around.
Exactly. No, but in this film's twisted and Jigsaw's twisted morality, snitching is as bad as being a drug dealer. And I'm like, snitching is the opposite of being a drug dealer. But more importantly, this is such a ridiculous film because what happens is they walk up there, and if not the first thing he says, it's like the second thing Jigsaw says to Donnie Wahlberg is, I've never killed anyone. I just put people into situations where they have to define. I'm like, did you not see the three cops who just got electrocuted to death 5 minutes ago?
Yeah.
You killed them? Hey, what about the cop from the first movie who you tricked into walking through a tripwire that blew the top of his body off with four shotguns at once? Like, you killed him? Like, what?
In his mind, but you know what? No, he can say what he wants.
No. In all of the other stuff, he's so painstakingly setting up this crap to get people to do stuff to yourself. Setting up a booby trap to protect your house is murder. By any
maybe they live in a state where that is, in fact, legal. You're allowed to protect your property with lethal force.
You are, unless it's the cops who are coming to arrest you. Like, trespassing laws don't...
I'm just looking for a way out here. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I agree with you. I'm just, you know, I'm just trying to find a reason as to why this might have been written this way.
Because it was a badly written film. I think it might be the reason it was written that way. Because it was not...
I like to explore all the options.
Possible options. But you got to admit, it's pretty indefensible. And more to the point, I just want to say that, like, he had no, if you look at his overall plan, he had no intention of letting anybody but Amanda and, you know, Donnie Jr. out of that house alive.
That's true.
Like, he had no intention of anybody getting out alive, which means the whole game was kind of crap.
Yeah, well, I guess he feels like he's kind of doing a public service because, you know, these people really aren't contributing members of society, except with the possible exception of Preppy Girl. But
yeah, and I just like to point out that Preppy, that in that situation, like, because we can tell he had no intention of letting them any of them get out alive. Because if he had had any intention of that, he would have, you know, not put in crazy psychopathic murderous drug dealer. You know. Like, you don't put that guy into the mix if you want there to be a fair game for everybody else.
Right. Because
that guy just ruins everything. Clearly. Oh, my God. But, oh, and the stupidest thing in the movie? And, I mean, this is a movie with, as we've chronicled, a bunch of stupid crap. But you know what the stupidest thing in that movie is?
What?
It's the fact that Jigsaw's entire escape plan is based on no one ever looking up.
What are you talking about?
The fact that he was sitting in an elevator the entire time. That his office was actually an elevator.
Well, you know, he had it disguised. And...
But no, if you look, right, the way the shot is framed, they actually frame the shot very carefully when they're running in to arrest him. And they show you, like, nothing above the doorway, because they know above the doorway is the big wooden slats that are the door of the elevator. And if we, the audience, saw it, we would know he was sitting in an elevator. And I'm like, okay, but the cops in the room can see all those wooden slats. Like, can't they tell that's an elevator just by looking at it? Because you really should. They can see the wooden slats. They can see the gears above it if they look up anywhere near the room. But the film never gives us another wide shot of the entire office area. So we're specifically, like, it was only a thing that could ever trick us rather than something that could trick people actually in that situation.
Again, sort of
a lesser complaint, you would say.
Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah. I am being nitpicky on that one. I do. would you like to know something else I'm going to be nitpicky about?
Sure.
The incredibly bad Photoshopped picture of Donnie Wahlberg and his son. Like, you couldn't get these guys in front of, like, Maple Leaf Gardens or something and just take a picture of them coming out of a hockey game? Seriously? Like, what the hell was that?
I have nothing for you.
Even worse, when I have these for my my related post. I actually got screenshots of these ones because I bought the movies for this piece, which I now regret doing. But anyway, you know, maybe when I watch all the special features, I'll change my mind. But I got screenshots of this because later, when Donnie Wahlberg is freaking out, he has flashbacks to happy times with his son, and like flashback one is. Here the two of us are sitting and talking outside what's clearly the movie set. And then, like, flashback two is, here's the two of us sitting and talking on what are clearly the steps outside the wardrobe trailer.
So laziness. Yeah, I'm like, just, issue with laziness.
I have an issue with laziness. Like, this is a $10 million movie. You can buy a, like, catcher's mitt and a baseball glove and, you know, get the two of those guys to, like, play catch for 2 minutes while you snap photos. You know? Because it just looked ridiculous. So, yes, the laziness of the filmmakers is something I'm reacting badly to.
Yeah.
But, yeah, but it's like this, the traps in this movie, just completely unwinnable. Although, this is the first movie to really get into something that I'm going to end up talking about really liking from the franchise. And I know you're thinking, wait, Cam, you like something from this franchise? Well, I do.
Because I was going to talk about something that really bothers me.
Oh, sweet. I like that Dina Meyer, who is in one scene in the first film, has been promoted to third lead in this film.
Yes.
And I like that. Like, the continuity of the actors is something that I'm going to talk about a lot during our discussions of this film series. Because I like that it's like, oh, she was there for one scene. But now, because, you know, Danny Glover's dead and Asian guy are dead, she's in charge of the Saw case. And I kind of liked that.
See, the thing, what I was going to say was that we find out more about Jigsaw in this movie, and we do in subsequent films. But this is, you know, problems start cropping up because in the first movie, you know, he's diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah.
And that, I guess, kind of sets him, like, pushes him over the edge.
Yeah.
And so he decides he's going to start teaching people valuable
lessons. He goes to use the clinical term, cuckoo bananas.
But then we find out in this movie that after being diagnosed with cancer, he tries to kill himself. Fails at that. And then that's when he decides that he needs to start teaching people valuable life lessons. It's like, well, you told me that it, you know, it had to do with being diagnosed with cancer. Now you're telling me, well, you know, it's the cancer and the failed suicide attempt.
Yeah.
We're going to come back to this in subsequent films.
We really are.
So this, you know, you want to talk about continuity of actors and characters. I want to talk about continuity of with purpose and intent and backstory. Motivation.
And by the way,
motivation. That's the
with each subsequent film, this is going to become a bigger issue. I think it's fair to say. As the writers, as I pointed out, as the writers come back to the events of the first film, like more and more, layering more and more crap on top of it. This is, yeah, Jigsaw's motivation. The weird part is, the stuff that comes later that we're going to talk about soon, you know, is another issue. But yeah, in the second film, I guess I didn't have a problem with that one extra layer that his first idea was to kill himself because of depression. But then when he found out that, you know, he still desperately wanted to live, I guess that's what pushed him into becoming a crazed serial killer, a crazed serial killing life coach.
Right.
But, you know, I don't have as much of a problem with that, but I like you, I'm going to have more of a problem with it as the series goes on. But two things for the end of this movie that really bugged me. I guess three things total. A, we saw where the bathroom was from the first movie, and the place Marky Mark drives to. Oh, Marky Mark, sorry, Donnie Wahlberg. I always get, you know, the two different pop brothers confused. The place Donnie Wahlberg drives to. Is so clearly not that place.
I don't care.
Okay, I know you didn't care, but I'm just saying, so clearly not that place. Okay, that's one. Two, you know, Donnie, once you're at the house, you can call for backup. You know? This is the character Jigsaw. His only scheme, right, is that he puts people in devilish traps. Like, that's all he does all day, is just think of devilish traps to put people into. So, after you found out that he had a plan to get just you and him out of the building and drive you somewhere, it never occurred to you for a second that he might have a devilish trap ready?
But the devilish trap was the bathroom.
I know. No, don't get me wrong. I liked that the devilish,
that devilish
trap was the bathroom. I enjoyed that, but come on, that didn't occur to you that he might have another devilish trap? When that's all he does? That's like saying, you know, you go somewhere alone with Jason and not expecting him to be stabbing you. Like, that's all he does. All he does is stab you. I don't care, like, if Jason comes to your house and says, hey, let me drive you to a movie. Okay, or hands up a card, holds up a card that says that because he doesn't talk. But it's like, you've got to be expecting to get stabbed. Okay? And in the same way, anything Jigsaw does, you have to expect is going to end up with a devilish trap. Okay, so I don't know.
I will give you that. But, okay, so he does put Donnie Wahlberg in his devilish trap, which consists of shackling him in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Maybe not the most devilish of his traps.
Well, I think that was step one.
But it leads to a good moment, though, where Donnie Wahlberg breaks his foot to get out.
That happens in the next film that we're going to talk about. We're not at the next film yet. There's one more thing I wanted to say. One, it was much weaker at the end of Saw 2 when Amanda slams the door shut than it was in the first one, because it was so obvious that she was in on it. But more importantly, like in this, like she does the little speech at the end saying, I am Jigsaw's apprentice, and when he dies, I am going to take over his work for him. And I'm like, how are you going to do that? Because I'm not saying you're not a really, really clever and resourceful, you know, junkie skank. But, you know, he is a once in a million years, you know, genius engineer millionaire who has the ability to create these devious traps. I don't think you have the ability to, like, I'm not even talking about the mechanical ones that I flat out know you can't build. I don't think you have the wit to come up with the kind of even simple ironic punishments that Jigsaw likes.
Wow. I mean, awfully hard on Shawnee.
I'm very hard on Amanda's character, but you can't tell me you see anything in her character that suggests that she has the cleverness to come up with what Jigsaw does.
No, but I mean, I'll be honest, I really wasn't thinking about that at the time.
Okay, well, that's what I was thinking about at the time, which I guess is explored more in the film Saw 3, which we're going to take a brief break now. That's the end of this file. You can go grab yourself a snack, watch the movies if you want to, come back and meet us right here for as many Saw films as we can fit into the next hour of this before we take another break. Maybe two, maybe three, who knows? We'll see. But definitely we'll be covering three and probably four. So, thank you for listening to part one of the Saw-rama.